Grace to you and peace from the one who creates and redeems and sustains us for all time. Amen. So over the last couple of weeks in the Old Testament lessons, and if you remember, I'm kind of concentrating on the Old Testament this summer. After a couple of weeks of kind of frankly horrible stories from the Old Testament, particularly the attempted murder of Ishmael, the near sacrifice of Isaac, today we have a love story, a welcome respite from all of the death and destruction. And it seems so strange in many ways to move from the near death of Abraham's two sons to the death of Sarah, and now to a love story. Many of the ancient rabbis really link the death of Sarah to that scene in which Abraham stands over his son with the sacrificial knife and is ready to kill him. In one of the midrashes, one of the rabbis writes, "Sarah died when she found out what Abraham was about to do." Now the text notes, Sarah has died, and now it is time for the next generation to be born. The text notes that throughout this entire time, God's chesed, God's steadfast love, remains with Abraham. And so a servant is sent. An unnamed servant. Do you notice they never say who the servant is? Jim, where did he go? The problem with biblical literacy is that parts of the story are missing. For the sake of the length of the reading, several bits are chopped out of this reading. But the story is fairly simple. God calls on this unnamed servant to find Isaac a wife. And the servant prays and seeks a sign, and then he acts. He travels to a land far away to find this wife, this elusive wife for Isaac. For Abraham has said to him, "Promise me this, that you will not get him a wife from among the Canaanites, but from among my own people." So he travels back to Abraham's people to find that wife. And as he's sitting there by the well, I love this. This is this bargaining thing with God. As he's praying, he says, "Lord, send me a sign." And this should be the sign. By the way, this should be the sign. That she will offer me and my camels a drink. And here comes Rebecca. She comes and she stands at the well and she dips her jar into the well and she puts it on her shoulder or on her head. And as she begins to walk away, typical male, "Excuse me, could I have a drink?" And she puts down her jar and she offers not only the unnamed servant a drink, but she says, "You know, as long as you're having a drink, shall I water your camels?" Doesn't seem like all that big a deal till you realize what a Herculean task she has undertaken. The average camel drinks 20 to 30 gallons of water at a shot. He has 10 camels. No wonder he's impressed with Rebecca. Not only is she beautiful, she is strong. So Abraham's servant sees what she does, and he prays, and he waits, and he says, "This is the one." And he gives her gold, and puts the cuffs and bracelets and the nose ring, and gives her all of these gifts. And he takes her back to meet Isaac. Now, in a way, it certainly is generosity, right, on the part of on the part of the unnamed servant to give all of this gold and stuff. It's a kind of bribe, probably, but it's also that he wants to reward her for being the one that God has chosen. And at the same time, he also knows that her father and her uncle have an eye for finer things. So he's bribing them as well. And he takes her back and he prepares to be Isaac's bride. And then there's that wonderful scene that you tripped over, because all of a sudden it changes times and places. And in this scene, she's riding up on the camels, and Isaac is in the field. That wonderful scene. And she says, who is that? And the unnamed servant says, that is my master. Now, in the English, it says that she slipped off of her camel. In the Hebrew, it says, and she fell off her camel. She falls off of her camel, and then you know how it all goes from there. He takes her back to his wife's tent, and they are together then forever, and a new generation begins. Now, this story is a strange one for our own sensitivities. If you have any feminist qualities about you whatsoever, you should be in absolute and complete shock. But I was thinking about who the hero is. Certainly isn't the uncle or the father with the unpronounceable name. In a way, it's not even Rebecca. The hero of the story is never even named. It is the servant who narrates the story as if this is just something that happens every day. This unnamed disciple of God who does this incredible work of beginning the next generation of Israel. Catherine Schiffedecker, in her commentary, notes how incredible this particular disciple is and what a great model of discipleship he is for us. He does these four simple things. He prepares for the task to which he has been called. He waits for the right time. He prays. And then he acts. In his preparation, he listens for what it is that he needs to know. He knows he shouldn't get somebody from Cana, which is the easy thing to do. Go out into the market, find a nice girl, bring her home, it's all fine. He puts together the journey, the camels, all of the treasures that he will need to bribe Rebecca a little bit later on. He gathers everything he needs. He prepares himself for the journey. He waits for a while. Until the right time. But he doesn't just wait for waiting's sake. He waits within God's chesed. Do you remember at the beginning of the story, it says, for the sake of God's steadfast love? That's the chesed. All of this whole story unfolds in the midst of God's steadfast love. He patiently waits for a sign from God. He discerns as he waits by the well. He prays while he's there. I find his prayer funny. Oh God, please give me a sign. And by the way, this is what it should be. It's a little bit like being on a stewardship committee. Church. We're going to pray, but we're going to set a goal. So he prepares and he waits and he prays, and then maybe the most difficult part of discipleship, he acts. He acts. I'm sure all of you have been part of organizations and churches and committees who are just happy to pray and prepare. And wait forever. We should talk about this some more. Right? I've shared with you that in one of my congregations, that I was with for quite a while, we would talk things and talk things and talk things forever. We seldom ever actually did anything, but we would talk about it for so long that it became part of the collective memory of the group that we'd actually done it. And people would reminisce about the time that we did such and such, and I would say, you never did that. But we talked about it. This unnamed servant prepares and waits and prays and finally acts. He brings Rebecca to this new community, and literally a new generation is born. God's chesed, steadfast love, endures even into the next generation. God's promise to Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Rebekah begins to unfold anew. And the next generation is born. Discipleship for the unnamed servant is not a simple matter. Nor is it filled with the kind of complicated burden that we times put upon discipleship these days. In our youth, as you know, some of our youth, we all went to the Western States youth gathering together. By the way, I just want to do a shout out to our kids. They were awesome. I want to say that the ones who were late for every single event were not our kids. Thank you so much. But I remember one night, I don't know if you two remember, as we were gathered in worship one of the nights, one of the preachers, this wonderful black preacher, started talking about what it means to be a disciple. And one of the things that he talked about was all the things that we should be afraid of. Do you remember that? And I kept thinking, stop saying that. I mean, it's good advice, but it's not quite the gospel. In the end, it was all fine. In the end, it turned out that what it was to be disciples is to carry that burden in God's chesed, to carry that burden fully aware of God's steadfast love. And it was so exciting in this time when I think many of us are worried about the discipleship of our young people to see over 600 young people and a few old people actually dancing to the Lord. It was awesome. Even Dylan moved. Do you want me to show him the video? Because I got it right here. Maybe living out God's promise and God's gospel and carrying that burden that Jesus talks about together is to carry it with God's chesed. Perhaps that disciple called is living out God's chesed in the world, living out God's chesed in the midst of tragedy and death and birth. Live out God's chesed in political division and uncertainty, to live out God's chesed in the midst of the wealth gap that is becoming increasingly concerning, to live out God's chesed in the midst of in our fellow members or in our church, to live out God's chesed as a way of discipleship. Just told his disciples to take up their cross and follow him, and then right afterwards says, and by the way, that cross, that symbol of death, comes with God's chesed. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Even if sometimes it doesn't feel that way. And so, brothers and sisters, in this we find a love story with new beginnings that draws us in our discipleship through the life of the unnamed servant back to the discipleship to which we are called in the world, to live out God's steadfast love.